Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Well, here we are again, guys. One man down. Nick Friend's unable to join us this week. He's got the dreaded lurgy. He's been up all night, no doubt, watching reruns of all the county action that has taken place over the last 4 days or so. One win from two rounds of the county championship. Now, I'm glad we talked at length about the Kookaburra ball last week. It means we don't have to do it all over again today. There is plenty to talk about, though, on the show. We're going to talk about the fact that there has only been one positive result. We'll talk about Essex. They're looking good. We'll talk about Durham after Harmy's bold and strident comments last week. The County Cricketer WhatsApp group was a flurry on days one and two of that match against Warwickshire, or their match against Warwickshire. Going to talk about the women's game, big changes afoot. And we're going to pick out a few key individuals from the action. I think, though, and it is a story that we touched upon 2 weeks ago, George, not for the first time, you were at the forefront of the story, but Worcestershire underwater, and the club now saying they're actively looking for a new ground, which will change the landscape of county cricket, literally. What are their options? How close are we? And how has it come to this? And good day to you both.
Hello there. Yeah, very sad, really, what's going on at Worcestershire, but sensible that they're thinking and looking at all the alternatives, because, you know, they're flooded for, or they have recently flooded for the eighth time since October, which is a record. And we know that they're not able to play at their home ground until at least the 24th of May, and it may well stretch a bit longer than that. So they're looking at options, and they're... their options aren't plentiful, but they're exploring them. And the feedback I've had from their members and supporters generally suggests that people are pretty open-minded about it. No one wants to leave New Road. No one does. But there does seem to be an inevitability about the flooding now. And, you know, cricket and water don't mix so well, do they? There aren't obvious options because of the ground situation on a floodplain, it's not worth a huge amount to developers. And quite what it could be sold for and for how much remains to be seen. If I were to take a guess on the future, I would suggest that there's an area to the southeast of the city called Worcester Parkway, where they've built a big station. It's quite near the M5, and there are plans for 10,000 new homes. You would suspect that there need to be leisure and sporting facilities there as well. And I wonder if there's a possibility to piggyback on some government funding, maybe some developers funding, and create a new ground that way. But there's a lot of work to do. We're nowhere near saying that they're definitely going to move or anything like that. It is, without any exaggeration, an existential crisis for the club. And I applaud them for looking at it and calmly exploring their options. But if they decided to go now, it would take a minimum of 5 years, I think. And they haven't even found the money yet. So There's an awful lot to do. But just to put in perspective of how wet it is there, one of the options I've heard for New Road, the ground, where it's been their home since 1899, I think, is to make it into a marina. That's how wet it is. You know, to literally cut a channel into the river, allow it to fill up with water and build around it, you know, so that you might have, I don't know, bars, restaurants, maybe even residential accommodation. But people say to me, by the way, a lot, could they build a barrier? Not really. For one thing, I don't think you maybe understand the extent of the flooding. The flooding is, I don't know, if I say it's 10 feet, I'm probably minimizing it. It can be very high. And it comes from all sides. It comes from different rivers, and I've seen it come from underneath. So you would have to tank it in a way that I think is impractical. And of course, you don't, the water's got to go somewhere, and you don't want to divert it into residential areas. So I don't think a barrier, I'm afraid, is the solution. And I think reluctantly, as I'm sure everyone thinks, that they're right to look at alternatives.
Sad times for Worcestershire. There are also sad times for Kent and England. Derek Underwood passing away this week. England's greatest spinner. Would have been England's greatest bowler if he hadn't gone to South Africa on a rebel tour. He probably would have gone past Fred Truman's record at the time. Of course, others have gone past that. And some, I mean, some incredible stats and stories. Geoffrey Boycott, very good about him. In the Daily Telegraph, as you'd imagine, good pieces in the Cricketer, Cricinfo as well. Some incredible stats coming out of it. I know you can't judge a man or describe a man's life on stats alone, but you know, a county game, he took 8 for 9 on one occasion, which is ridiculous, right? And I had a little look to see where he stood, Derek, in the list of all-time wicket takers in the history of the County Championship, and he comes in a pretty healthy 14th, just behind. I don't know if you've heard of I don't know if you've heard of WG Grace. He's just above Derek Underwood, just Fred Titmuss, made famous from the Half Man Half Biscuit song, of course, and Wilfred Rhodes at the top of the charts. But of course, all three of us probably we're all a bit too young, really. We didn't see him bowl live.
I did, I'm afraid. I
Oh, you
did.
mu did you? You
I
must.
did, and I
Well, you
went to the
must.
Lord's final where he was picked to play for Kent and didn't bowl, and Somerset won, which was extraordinary. Vic Marks was player of the match, so you know, you would think it helps spinners. Can I give you one stat on
Yeah,
Derek?
go for it.
I think he got his 1,000th first-class wicket at the age of 25. It's ridiculous, yeah.
That is ridiculous. That is ridiculous. So, a Kent legend. And I kind of got the feeling that maybe young Jaden Denley was conjuring up a little bit of Derek Underwood's spirit yesterday when he was blocking out Essex towards the back end of that innings yesterday. So, yeah, sad times. But Harmy, again, not somebody that you would have seen bowl in the flesh. But he was one of those characters that whoever you were commentating with or whoever you were with, they spoke about him with such awe, and with such respect, even though actually he wasn't actually a visible presence for much of the last 20, 30 years within the media. His nickname probably helped a little bit, didn't it? GBH.
My early recollection, you know, of hearing the name of Derek Underwood was, you know, when I was coming through the ranks at Durham, and you know, the great man Norman Gifford, who, you know, a first-class career was similar to Derek Underwood's, played for England but didn't play as many times as Derek Underwood, and Gif would talk about him, you know, so fondly, and what a you know, unbelievable bowler he was on these uncovered pitches. Slightly different to the normal spin bowler, which is like the flight and, you know, over the top. He was more of a sort of a gentle medium pacer than from a pace point of view. But they said he was just an unbelievable bowler. And Ian Chappell, I remember reading Ian Chappell saying he was very difficult to get down the wicket to. So he sort of caught you on the crease and, you know, basically pinned you back because of the way he bowled. And I managed to meet him a couple of times, and he's anything but his nickname. His nickname, Deadly, was anything. He was such a very, very quiet man. And at the end of his career, he didn't have a great deal of time in the media shouting, you know, his opinions. He was somebody who, you know, was always seen around Canterbury, and My brother played for Kent for 5 years, and he would say he's seen Derek Underwood, and that was a generation again past mine, and all the Kent players spoke well of him. So he'd be sadly missed. One of England's all time greats, leading wicket taker from the spin bowling department, and somebody who I think, along with Graham Swan, will probably go down as one of England's greatest ever spin bowlers.
Yeah, well said, Harmy. Shall we talk Kookaburra? We really talked about this so well last week. It was favourite point of the show, really, listening to you, Harmy, George and Nick, coming from really covering the story from three very different angles. I found it fascinating, and hopefully the listeners did too. We've just had another round of county championship games, which has used the Kookaburra. Now you can't move for people telling everybody that they've known for years that it shouldn't be this way. Just wondering if you fine-tuned your opinions on the ball, fine-tuned the way that the game should be approaching. Are we all looking forward to the Dukes coming back? Are we all going to be moaning when teams are bowled out for 75 up and down the country next weekend? I mean, where are we right now? Start with you, George, as we just heard from Harmy on Derek.
Well, I think we've got to remember it's an experiment. And as we talked about last week, it's probably wise to resist final conclusions until the experiment is complete. I thought there was a perfect storm of difficult conditions in these last few days. It's been wet, so the pitches are soft, and the Kookaburra doesn't react great in the damp. And maybe that's going to be our conclusion. I think there's a fair chance we'll decide that the Kookaburra isn't great at this time of year, but if we use the Dukes and decide to be bowled out for 80 and 100 and whatever, we probably would have thought that there was an issue there. We're probably just playing too early in the season. Teams are playing friendlies in March. It's too early. We're just trying to squeeze too much in. And I'm loath to say this because I regret the path we're on, which will see the championship cut to 10 games. I feel that's inevitable. I regret that it's always the championship that seems to have to make way, but we are where we are. There were some positives. We saw a lot of overs of spin, which we wouldn't have done usually at this time of year. There wasn't a lot of assistance for spinners. Some places there probably was, but I think at Trentbridge, for example, they used the same pitch because it had been covered last week, so the run-ups were being covered so they could play there. And I think that's reasonable in the circumstances. And spinners will benefit from time bowling, even if there wasn't assistance. So that's a positive. There was nothing in the ball for fast bowlers. Nothing. I don't care if it had been Dale Steyn or Joel Garner or Rich Tadley or Imran Khan. No bowler, fast bowler, would have got anything from the ball this week because the Kookaburra, when it gets damp, it seems to expand a little bit, go very soft very quickly. It creates, to be honest, stultifyingly dull cricket, very attritional. Now, if there is a purpose in that, maybe it's worth it, maybe. But Lord, it's going to kill the county game in terms of being a spectacle. Always have reservations about the Kookaburra. I just don't think it's as good a ball, but I've always been able to see the sense in the experiment. We've probably learned something in the last week. I don't know, Harmy, what do you think?
I'm still of the opinion time and a place. If you want to try and be positive, you're talking about the spin bowlers. Yes, they're getting more overs and they're learning their trade, which is fantastic. I agree, there's nothing in it for the seamers. I think when you have lawmakers and you've got people in jobs that change rules all the time, they feel as though they've got to do it for the sake of doing it's sick. And I sometimes wonder, who are these lawmakers or these rule changers or these experimental people? Because do they really understand the game? Do they know that the Kookaburra ball goes soft and expands when it's wet? So why are we using it at this point in time? The one thing I will say about this, I think it could be positive for the schedule and going forward, because there's a lot of talk about, George, you're saying, are we playing too early? Yes, we probably are playing too early. Could we play one day cricket at this time of the year? Well, the one thing I've just been noticed over the last 2.5, 3 weeks is that the white Kookaburra ball, there's a run fest because everywhere has been a run fest. So the pitches are decent and the white Kookaburra ball is being used, then all of a sudden, there's runs on the board. So we can play one day cricket at this point of the year. So if we were to play one day cricket in end of April, say, and then keep them two county championship matches further down the line, then all of a sudden we could have four championship games in the middle of the summer where you probably could use the Kookaburra ball and see its full effect, which the idea of the Kookaburra ball is first 10 overs, it does a little bit, swings around a bit, nips a little bit. Then it goes, pretty flat, doesn't do a great deal. And you're trying then to get it to reverse swing. Now, it's not going to reverse swing in April and May. And I think these are the skill sets. If I was a selector, if I was in charge of the England cricket team and I'm trying to produce fast bowlers or spin bowlers, I want these are the key components of making a good international cricketer. Can you get the ball to reverse swing after 40 overs, 40 to 60? Then the spinners come in. And that's when you look at, we've all just been to India and we've watched Jasprit Bumrah, one of the best reverse swing bowlers. He was decent in the first throws of new ball. He was deadly when it was reverse swinging. And I think that's what we've got to try and produce if we want to be a better England cricket team away. And I think that's what, what I want from my fast bowlers. Can you bowl the Kookaburra ball in the middle of the day when it's not doing a great deal to get it to reverse swing to go? And I think that's the thing that's really been missed the point in these first 3 weeks. There's a lot of people, Graham Swan and one or two others, get the Duke ball back. Now, I agree it's not the greatest time to be bowling with a Kookaburra, but for God's sake, don't just throw it in the bin and say it's an experiment that's not worked. Kick it down the road and say, not interested in using it. I think we've just got to use it at a better time. But I think because of the way it's reacted, we could use a white ball at this time. And I don't think that would be magnified of like poor cricket, turgid cricket, because I think it's shown that you can bat on these wickets with a white Kookaburra ball. And I think it would be entertaining. It would be disappointing from the crowd point of view because they're sitting watching in a freezing cold white ball cricket and trying to get excited. But I think if you're looking for positives and what you can achieve further down the line, this might be the next experiment that they need to look at. Move the red ball cricket to the middle of summer, move white ball cricket to the start of the summer, and you can use a white Kookaburra and probably still have decent, meaningful, entertaining cricket.
Right, that's a Kookaburra chat done for this week. He'll be back next week when the Duke's ball is in operation. spare a thought for Ed Bernard. You know, when we... last couple of seasons, we've done cricketers to keep an eye on. Wasn't Ed Bernard one of Nick's, or was it? Was it? Am I imagining things?
I don't remember that, but he's Ed Bernard, a terrific cricketer.
No, absolutely.
He's fortunately he's a phlegmatic fella. I mean, he received on a pitch. What did Warwickshire end up with? Almost 700.
698.
Yeah, right.
For how many? For how many, Harmy?
Seven, wasn't it? Seven?
Seven? Are you having a laugh?
No,
six. Harmy. Was it six, was it?
No, down.
I know that was Durham, that. But the other one, you've been talking to Ed Bernard, you've got to chuck Mark Stoneman in there as well. 550 for two. He got 12.
Well, Ed Bernard's faced four deliveries before getting the ball of the round.
He got a peach of a ball. I mean, he literally drifted in, pitch middle, hits the top of half. And then he wasn't even asked to bowl. He's fine. He wasn't asked to bowl because the pitch was so flat. It was not really going to suit his medium-fast seamers. He had a tough week. I mean, I think we should tell the listener probably that we can exchange a few messages.
Hopefully it's not singular.
Well, yeah.
I see how many downloads we get. Robust listening figures, I would like to say. But yeah, go for it, George. Explain to our listener.
Last week, of course, Harmy was talking very persuasively, by the way, about the strength of Durham and the Durham attack in particular. And I think it's fair to say that I did send a few photos of the scorecard. I think with the first one, when it was 300 without loss.
300 without loss, 490 for one.
Well, hang on, 300 without loss. And, had they reached lunch? I mean, we'd only had 40 overs, I think. It was ridiculous.
And to be fair to them, they are clearly a terrific attack. I mean, so I was at that game and they They would admit they bowled horribly. They did. Yeah. There's no way around it. They bowled horribly. They're clearly lacking cricket.
Yeah.
You know, Brydon Carse is—he's had a nightmare, but he's obviously—I think they're good people having bad days. And they dragged it back a wee bit, but Warwickshire played very well, flat wicket, Cookham ball. As I say, a perfect storm, but it was quite funny. But I'm absolutely sure they'll be better for the bowl. Actually, Warwickshire weren't that much better the previous week and were much better this week for the run out. And I'm sure that Durham are in the same situation. But it was quite amusing. And they go into the third round without bowling bonus points.
Yeah. Which,
bearing in mind how, I mean, I know it's freakish. But that, bearing in mind how good that attack is. And also, I'm going to say it, Callum Parkinson was the pick of the bowlers and the Durham attack. And he's conceded a record amount of runs. And genuinely, as it went on, he started to bowl really, really well. And if you just watch the Ed Barnard wicket, it's a, yeah, as you said, it's a thing of beauty.
Harmony, have you got anything you'd like to say?
No, I'm still backing my boys to come good in the end. They've set the bar quite low, so there's always room for improvement next week and the week after. I had a conversation with Neil Mantle yesterday, and have you been in many days like that? I was thinking there was a day at Lord's where we only took, when it was Graham Smith's first game as McGovern's first game as captain. Graham Smith got a double 100. Herschel got 100 and plenty, and must admit, at the end of that day with only one wicket down, it was soul-destroying having to come back and think, I've got to take 9 wickets. The wicket looked flat, playing one side of the square, and the ball didn't do a great deal, but I'm not defending them. Some of the bowling that Durham did bowl last week was really poor, and they'll want to be better this time. Hopefully, bowling's not too bad. That would be a big blow for Durham if Scott Boland does miss a length of time. Didn't bowl in the first round of championship matches because obviously there was washout. So they'll be good for a good bowl. But I'm still backing my boys to still be there, thereabouts at the end, because I still think they've got a very, very good bowling attack.
There or thereabouts. That's changed a little bit from last week.
Do you know what? They've got a good batting lineup as well. I think they can follow on. But yeah. They scored 500. I mean, you know, Beddingham didn't get huge scores, but he looks class. Lee, fantastic. Robinson, dangerous. You know, the scorecard doesn't show it, but they are a very strong side. They just have...
Actually, George, I've got a question for you on that front, because whenever somebody comes out of the international cricket, the individual has to say, what do I need to do to get back? Now, Alex Lees was a victim of the end of Joe Root Brigade in the poor pitches or the turgid pitches in the West Indies. He lost these players. Is that the first time you've seen Lees back since then? Second of all, have you seen a great deal of difference between Alex Lees that you've seen get picked for England, then play for England, to where you seen last week on what was a pretty, placid pitch?
Good question. I don't know whether I'd seen him since, to be honest, might not have done. And yes, he looks as if he's grown in stature. He's got an extra gear. He looks very good. But to be fair to him, he might have said this to you. Had he been asked to perform a role in that side, in the England side, the quite attritional role? And he's developed his game. And I don't think he'd let England down, but then he never did. It's not like he had a shocker by any means. So, yeah, he continues to improve. It's like he's gone away, realised what he has to do and worked on it. But, a long way back for him, They look pretty settled until the other side of the Ashes. But I guess a broken finger, he'll be there or thereabouts if that did happen. And he looks, at county level, he looks a bit of a giant. He does look like one of those players who is an absolute banker for a lot of runs. So fantastic county signing.
I'll move that conversation on to another player that you really backed strongly, George, for a number of years, Dominic Sibley, a guy who was at Warwickshire, sandwiched in between two spells at Surrey. He is a guy that seems to have changed his game. Alex Stewart speaking before the start of the season, saying that we can expect to see a slightly different Dominic Sibley this season. And I actually had a couple of beers with Dan Worrell a couple of weeks ago, and he said bowling to Dominic Sibley in the nets. Suddenly, Sibley seems to have opened up the offside. That seems to be the catchphrase when it comes to him. Watching him at the start of his innings in first innings against Somerset, that seemed to be evident. Another guy like Alex Lees, who's kind of like following the same kind of journey, really, isn't he? He was at the top of the order for England. Seemed to have a style about him that was a little bit too pedestrian. And going back to the question Harmy asked, it does seem like he's attempting to change his game to try and raise the tempo of his innings.
To be fair, he became a bit of a parody of himself towards the end.
Yeah.
He was so much better than that when he started. You know, there were a couple of really important innings he played. Was one at Cape Town, certainly.
Yeah, we were all there, weren't we?
Yeah.
And was another at Old Trafford? I can't remember.
Old Trafford, yes.
Right. And, you know, he did have those shots, but he became, as I say, an exaggerated form, and he lost his strengths, really. You have to be able to score, of course. You know, it's true, I very much admired his defensive game and his concentration, but you do still need to make it count by scoring runs. And he lost any weapons. And so, yeah, he has changed his game. He's still a little bit open, but he maybe isn't quite as marked and mannered as before. And, yeah, maybe he's not quite as desperate, not quite as tense. You know, playing for England, getting that media scrutiny, living in the world of social media, really, really tough. And we've seen a lot of people eaten up by it. And I suspect if you asked him, he would tell you he's not thinking about England.
Yeah.
He's just trying to be the best version of Dom Sibley.
I think you're right.
Enjoying playing for Surrey.
I think there's another opener as well to throw in there. It's Keaton Jennings.
Keaton Jennings, yeah.
I remember watching him when he was really, really being put through the... I think India was the last series he played in England. And I'm sitting there before play starts, and you guys know what it's like. Before the fans arrive, or whilst they're arriving and the players are going through their drills, they're out on the pitch, they're on the outfield. And at the same time, on the tannoys, blaring out and on the big screens are highlights from the day before. And essentially, you're watching the England players go through their fielding drills or batting drills, whatever they do. And blasting out is the likes of Michael Atherton or Nasser Hussain or whoever, not only commentating on the dismissal that occurred the day before. So you're listening to yourself or watching yourself get out on the big screen, but you're also hearing your technique being dissected by the greats of the game. And this is all played out while you're supposedly going through your drills to get yourself up to speed to get out there and do it again. And I watch this on occasion and think, that's almost cruel. No, what other job do you have that running commentary on how you're performing in front of an audience?
Ours, but to a lesser extent. I mean, you know.
I'm not sure, not while you're writing.
Well, I don't know. Twitter's fairly vocal, isn't it? But no, you are, of course,
quite right. You could turn Twitter off. It's have a crowd of people behind you pointing at you, going, oh, he's doing a non sequitur again. Bloody George DeBell.
You know, if you remember,
Bob Dylan, what a surprise. Haven't heard a Bob Dylan lyric for at least 2 weeks. I mean, that would put you off, wouldn't it?
God, they're on to me.
If you remember as well, Keaton got that ball off Bummer that came back and he didn't pick it, didn't he? That got him LBW. And that, I think, that was, because it was a little bit embarrassing, I think that was held against him. That Sibley, Keaton Jennings, Alex Lees to a little bit of an extent. When you go into the international arena, like George just mentioned, the media noise and social media and everything like that, but you just got to get out twice the same way and that's it. The team's got you. The opposition has not got you, but it's in your mind. And then all of a sudden, Dominic Sibley can't play on the offside anymore.
Did Chris Reid ever recover from that slower Chris Cairns? Did he?
Not in Duncan Fletcher's mind.
Chris Reid did.
Chris Reid did. It didn't in Duncan Fletcher's mind. Yeah. Duncan Fletcher's mind was made up that moment. That's him done. You know, there was Graham Swan, bless him, would rub people up the wrong way by being Graham Swan in a dressing room or being as a character. And Duncan Fletcher didn't fancy Graham Swan for one bit, and that's why he didn't play. So, Chris Reid was made his mind up, Duncan Fletcher, that was it. I don't think I don't think really had a hangover from it. I just think, unfortunately, the person that was making the decisions, he was the one that decided that he's not for me anymore. So, and I think the Dom Sibley one, he got into a position of not being able to play on the right side because he nicked off a couple of times. Everybody's talking about it. Like you're saying, commentators are saying this, dissecting his attack, and it comes in the mind. You know, I went on tour with Sir Alistair Cook, Glenn McGrath just had a ball of half volley outside of stump and he nicked it. And the following Ashes tour away, he's gone over and I've spoke to Cookie about it and Cookie's gone, I am not playing one shot off the front foot in front of square, not one. And he didn't until he was about 250 in Melbourne or whatever it was. But there's only so many people can have that amount of mental strength, mental fortitude. And unfortunately, that's the difference between the good and the great. And you categorise Cook as one of the greats because of the mental strength he's got. I'm not sure some of the players that have played in the recent times, Silverwood era, Joe Root era, could sort of handle the pressure of being out twice, three times the same way and then adapt their game in international cricket, the likes of Broad, Anderson and Cook have done.
Well said, that man. OK, guys, performances. I mean, it's a little bit difficult to pick out. Not too difficult. It's too easy, isn't it? It's like shooting fish in a barrel. 2400s? Have there been 2400s in the first two rounds of the county championship? That was one
four double hundreds in the round.
Four doubles, yeah.
And 190 something.
Yeah, there's a lot of runs. So we can't really focus on every centurion. So apologies, centurions. Joe Clark, though, he has gone back-to-back. We spoke to him, or rather you spoke to him, Harmy, on the following-on show, which has already dropped into your podcast feeds. What did he have to say? He started the season well, back-to-back hundreds in both games that Nottingham should have played so far.
Yeah, he was brilliant, was Joe. I think we all know, you know, the history of Joe Clark. He's improving as a player year upon year. He had a difficult year, I think, last year. And he talked about that in such a way that, because I asked him about the Bazball, and he said he went about his job trying to be aggressive and fit in to try and get in the England team, and he's obsessed by it. And all the franchises around the world comes back, and he didn't have the greatest starts because he didn't feel as he had the greatest preparation last year, going straight into first-class cricket. This year, he said he came back a little bit earlier, February, indoor school, got himself ready to play. And he was interested in the line he said about the Bazball in first-class cricket, was the ball does a hell of a lot more. He said he had spoke to a lot of people over the winter talking about the good pitches, obviously ball not doing as much, so you can access the ball 360 around the ground. And he says now he's trying to build and make sure that he gets himself in, set, and then carry on from there. So, you know, it shows that he's learning. Interesting line, he's keeping wicket. So that's another good sign. For me, that's another good sign of a young player who wants to be an England cricketer. He probably identified that there's nobody breaking into the top six unless, like George said, a broken finger. Duckett and Crawley are going nowhere. Pope's vice-captain, as much as I think he's under a little bit of pressure from performance. Ben Stokes is constantly in his ear talking about everything, so that's there. Root, Brook and Stokes, I mean, that's nailed on, is 4, 5 and 6. So I think Joe Clark's possibly over the winter gone, right, I might have a chance at number 7 along with Jamie Smith, Phil Salt, Johnny Bairstow, Ben Foulkes, et cetera, et cetera. And he's thrown his hat in that ring. And, you know, he said, so far, so good. Knots haven't been that great, but he feels as though he's hitting the ball well. And back-to-back hundreds tells you there might be another name to sort of add to that number 7 wicket-keeping spot when it comes round in July.
We should make mention, of course, and in light of some pretty unsavoury stories coming out of Australia surrounding the former Australian opener, Michael Slater, who's been refused bail. And, of course, that's an ongoing case. But Joe Clark was involved in a pretty unsavoury story a few years back involving Alex Hepburn and Tom Cola Cadmore. He was sanctioned by the ECB for bringing the game into disrepute, I believe, because the WhatsApps that he shared with those two individuals were made public. George, you wrote an article last year, I think, suggesting that he had served his penance and should be considered for selection, and that drew quite a lot of criticism. Do you feel that Joe has changed as a person and has apologised publicly and enough to be brought back into the fold?
Good question. I don't know all the answers to those questions. I suppose I learned quite a lot from that experience and considered things that maybe I hadn't. I mean, I would always like to think that there's a way back, or in most cases. I think most of us have been grateful for second chances at some stage. Eh? So in general, in theory, you would like to think there was a way back, and he is very, very talented. I certainly thought when I saw him, I don't know, when he was 20, 21, playing for Worcester, I thought he'd definitely play international cricket. I think he's now 29 and he hasn't. And if it's going to happen, I thought it had gone, if I'm honest. So I think he has the natural talent. You ask about whether he's, I don't know, something made amends. I think he probably should have talked about it more and more openly and done something more publicly, if I'm honest. But it's very easy to be critical about these things. He did a piece and it felt, if I'm honest, it felt a little bit performative. But I understand why people would be careful, having written about this subject and had a bit of a backlash, which is fine. You know, that's all freedom of speech. He wasn't actually accused of anything criminal. He was associated with something really grim. As a young and foolish guy, I don't know. I wouldn't want him to, wouldn't want anyone to serve a whole life sentence, something like that. So I'm sort of reluctant to be drawn on it for all those natural reasons, but that's my honest view. I haven't seen him keep, or very, very little. I certainly haven't seen him keep while he's been at Nottinghamshire. So I don't know whether he is... I don't know whether he's good enough to go into that debate, but as a batter, crikey, he's good. And we talk about last season not being very good. He still averaged 50 in the tempo on a difficult wicket. So there's no lack of talent with the bat. Whether he could go number seven, I mean, crikey, that makes the batting strong. I'm a massive Ben Folkes fan. And if I was a bowler, I would be even more. Maybe you can get away with it. But, you know, Johnny Bairstow, if he's watching this, he'll be shouting at the screen and saying, what about me? And as Ollie Robinson and Jordan Cox and Jamie Smith, perhaps, you know, quite a lot of people who would have claims to do that job. And I don't have enough knowledge to talk about Joe Clark's wicket-keeping.
I don't know if I can, I should be saying this or say no, but when I was applying for the selectors job, I was asked about Joe Clark in the selectors interview. Would you pick him? And I said yes, because as long as I did my due diligence on the young man, that he was a better person than he was at the time he made the mistake, and he's repaired, you know, through time. And he's understood and he's owned the mistakes that he's made, and he's tried to put everything, you know, forward right, then I think I would pick him, because I think people do deserve second chances in life. And, you know, that for me, I think like you said, George, a very difficult subject to cover. But I think if you're just going to give somebody a life sentence at 21, then I think you've got to give that person a chance to be a better person. And I think if, from a selection point of view, if you do your homework and you see that this young man has improved as a person and he's remorseful for what happened and he's learned from the mistakes he's made, then I do believe people deserve second chances, because I've made so many mistakes in my life being given second chances. So I think, and I'm not for one minute, you know, showing, you know, covering up what happened. It was, you know, poor judgment what he did, and you know, it was horrendous what the went through, and the person went through. But I think as long as the person, i.e., Joe Clark, is a better person for it, then I think you know, people deserve second chances. So, and I got asked that during the selection interview, and that's what I said. And I would have picked him then, and I think I'd pick him now.
I think we have to say, well, I would acknowledge that we are, you know, men of a certain age and maybe see things in a slightly different perspective because of that. And I'd genuinely be interested in feedback on what other people think and actually how you think we've covered this. Because I think, you know, you naturally, well, we naturally quite often will have a liberal disposition, which means you want to see people given second chances. And you basically want to see young people fulfill their ability, their potential. But there obviously has to be a line. I mean, if you asked me about Alex Hepburn, you know, I wouldn't pick him, you know, whatever was happening. So there is clearly a line. And I'd be interested to know what other people think, because as I say, talking about this in the past, I learned from the experience. So, you know, and we do that every day, I guess.
Do you know what? Why don't you ask Elizabeth? Elizabeth Botcherby, she works for Cricketer magazine. Why don't you just have a private conversation with her this week and see what she thinks? Maybe she can come on and give us her views, because I am aware, like you, three middle class blokes talking about whether a bloke should be allowed back. I'd be interested to hear what, as you say, what other people think on a really tricky and horrible story. But, you know, that's what's happened. And I'm glad that we've had that conversation and happy to continue doing so.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
We are, I am mindful of the time. We've still got a lot to talk about. Just in terms of the rest of the fixtures, of course, if there hadn't been a little bit of rain, you know, on day four in Chelmsford and in South London, we may well have had two results. In fact, we almost certainly would have had a result in the game between Essex and Kent, which saw two Denleys at the crease together. Joe and his nephew, Jaden. Brilliant. I was watching the last, the last 10 overs of that on the Essex stream. And it was really nerve wracking. And then of course, over at the Oval where, Surrey went for 200 from 20 overs or whatever. And for 10 overs, I might do it. It would have put unwelcome gloss on a game that was really destroyed by the ball, really. But there we go. I don't know if there's any other performances or games that I might have missed from the 10 that we had. No, 9 that we had from the second round of the County Championship.
I think, you know, Matthew Potts' century, we mentioned the game, but I don't think it's irrelevant. Because while the pitch was flat and the attack was diminished, he did bat all day, you know. It takes some doing. The next highest score was 52.
And also, you know, one of the points that Harmy makes about Potts is that if you want a bowler who is going to bowl at the same pace and intensity spells four and five as he will do in spell one, then Potts is your bowler. So it is quite interesting that he can also bat time as well.
Just standards. He's got good standards for himself. That's for me. He's a thorough professional who's got good standards for himself. And he's gone out there with his big heart, big chested, and fancied the challenge of night watchman, and he's got himself in and batted all day. Brilliant to see. Well, fantastic to see. And it was like, it just reminded me of like the Jason Gillespie. Is he going to get 200? And like speaking to Dizzy about it all the time, never shut up about it, because Potsy will never shut up about this 149. I mean, he'd be an absolute nightmare in that Durham dressing room between now and the end of September. The Durham lads would be desperate for him to get picked for England, so he doesn't have to tell them about 149 for the rest of the season. But now, good on him. I thought there was some good spin bowling in different conditions. Thompson took 10 for Derbyshire, which for me is, we talk about it doesn't spin, so you've got to learn. Bashir got overs under his belt, got three wickets, overs under his belt. That will do him the world of good because he'll be learning different lines and different lengths. So all these, I think, are positives. I had a go, and I can't remember who the fielder was, but young George Bell got 99, clipped one to third slip, dived, thrown the stumps down. He looked quite close to he's going to get back. But one of the fielders gave him an almighty send-off, like you'd not believe. And I was like, what are you doing? What's this game come to when George is, what is he? He's 21. He looks amazing. He's 21 going on 12. But he's like a tiny little lad, little character, little stature. He's got run out on 99. Some moron decides that he's going to give him a volley in a send-off. I was like shaking my head. I couldn't stop laughing at it. So, yeah. Pick the bones out of that one.
Love it. Maybe old Matthew Potts can saunter up to the chairman's room. They can compare notes with Beefy on his 149.
Yeah, it's different circumstances and different times, but it was at a test ground. That's probably the only comparison.
Both 149. Can we talk about the women's game? Because is a decision expected this week, George? The eight team. So it's a little bit confusing, but essentially, the women's game, the four-day game, Red Bull game, will be going back to the counties. The counties will be retaking control. So various counties, I'm not sure how many, have submitted bids to be one of the teams. So there's going to be a couple of disappointed. 16, so 16 bids have gone in for eight
Durham
teams.
Durham have gone big, I think. Durham have gone really big.
So Durham have gone big. I know Surrey have gone big. What are you hearing, George? And how's this going to change things? And how are the counties going to afford these teams to support these teams? And we hear all the time about how much money they're losing, Surrey aside and Lancashire.
Well, that's an interesting question. I think we do have to reframe that conversation. I think we talk very often about the price of inclusion, the cost of inclusion, and we've got to look at the benefits of inclusion, not particularly long term. Any side will make much more money if they're relevant to more of their audience. We've had a game that's only been relevant to half the population at most, in that it was seen as a male game for an awful lot of its history. So I would see it as an investment, and it will only need to be a short-term investment to be relevant to women as well, in the same way that I don't see it as a cost to, I don't know, to invest in ACE and the South Asian Cricket Academy. So the ECB are putting up some money, and they're saying that there is a limit to eight teams this time. I think that will grow very quickly. And what I would say is, having visited a few Sussex being a great example, Sussex are desperate to host a team. And they're competing with Hampshire, who already effectively do, and do it pretty well, I think. So it would seem to me a bit of a missed opportunity not to give it to both of them. And it actually, as Harmy mentions, similar thing going on in the north between Yorkshire and Durham. I'm not sure eight's enough. It will be eight this time, but I think there is scope to grow it to 10 as quickly as in a year's time. And that's why the move to the county structure is interesting, because there's a very obvious and clear pathway for progress and growth. And that's great. It doesn't mean that it wasn't necessarily right to go to a regional model, because the counties had the opportunity to grow women's cricket for 100 years previously and hadn't. So it was taken away from them for a bit, but now it's gone back and they're the vehicle for growth. So that's quite exciting. A real tussle between the eight to get those eight. And as I say, if you saw the desperation or the passion that Sussex have to host, and I think they might miss out, it seems a real missed opportunity not to give it to them, in the same way that it seems a missed opportunity not to give it to Durham and Yorkshire. And again, I think it'll be one between. And equally, you've got a situation in the southwest where, you know, Bristol, Taunton and Cardiff are all keen, aren't they? And all have compelling cases, I would say. Is eight enough? I mean, we want the game to develop and grow quickly, don't we?
Yeah, that's the problem, I think. Have we got eight isn't enough, because we're trying to project this game to get bigger, but I think probably eight is enough when we're talking about quality of the standard of where you're going to start from and then move from and progress to and hopefully take it to the next level. So I think that's the fine balance in the women's game, that if you all of a sudden, if you go in straight in with 16, is the standard going to be as high? And I think that's where the thought process of eight comes in. I know Durham and Yorkshire have got a very good Northern Diamonds. I've got a niece who does, Eva's coming up 16, and she does 1 week at Durham, 1 week at Headingley, and she's from Ashington. So, and the Northern Diamonds are brilliant. They've got cross between, they've got a couple of girls from Scotland playing. They've got a hell of a lot from Northumberland, a lot from Durham, and a lot from Yorkshire. But like I said, like George said, there is a want in the Northeast to have both Durham and Yorkshire. But at this minute in time, their academy, Northern Diamonds, of bouncing between Durham and Yorkshire is actually working quite well for getting the best players to play with the best players to be the best team. And I think that's the challenge for the women's game going forward. How long do they stay at eight? But I think eight's probably the best number.
I should say that the cricketer is committed. I should have said this earlier. Apologies. Is committed to having reporters on the ground at every round of the county fixtures this summer. And that commitment has recently been recognised yet again, named the best place to read about the county game online, men and women, for the sixth year in a row at the ECB Domestic Cricket Journalism Awards. So congrats. For award-winning news and analysis about all 18 counties all year round, head to thecricketer.com/subscriptions and sign up now for just £3.99 a month. It is exciting times for women's cricket. I'm taking my daughter, 4-year-old daughter, to Beckenham on Sunday. I actually took her last Sunday, but they gave me the wrong date. So me and Dolores and my son Franklin played on the outfield on our own with a tennis ball that we found. I feel very, very optimistic about cricket, men and women's. I found it interesting, actually. So Lawrence Booth, the Wisden Almanac is out shortly, isn't it? And Lawrence has been doing the media rounds. He spoke to the guys yesterday, and that's available on the Following On podcast. And I'm no doubt he spoke to you. In fact, you're off to the Wisden dinner today, George, is that right?
That's right, yeah.
So by the time you listen to this podcast, it would have already happened. And, you know, one of the things that comes out this time every year is that the Wisden kind of put forward their address to the nation or the world about where the cricket should go, the worrying signs and all that stuff, which is fine. But I was pleased to see that there was also a lot of celebration in a lot of the stuff that's coming out. And that's kind of where we should be. I do think that we're a little bit, we should celebrate. We should really celebrate so much about our game, because it offers us so much. All the different formats, they may cannibalise each other a little bit, but there's so much there internationally. The women's game's coming through. And certainly I look at my daughter and I think, wow, you could play for England one day, or New Zealand, or China, maybe. And that's a great place to be, I would suggest.
Yeah, well, you're definitely right about that. I mean, and actually, point taken, because I'm a bit down about some aspects of the current game, and I'm worried about the private equity involvement and all sorts of other things. But you're right. It is a huge strength of the game that every format works.
Yeah.
I love all the formats. And that's almost unique, isn't it?
I would definitely say it's unique. I mean, they've tried it in other sports. Kind of have it a little bit in rugby with the sevens, but not really.
But that's two formats.
Yeah, and the sevens only really works in a very specific kind of, like, you know, the Hong Kong sevens or whatever. It doesn't really work. It doesn't support the game, does it? It doesn't drive the game. It doesn't financially. Do you know what I mean? So I think you're absolutely right. I think cricket is unique in the way that it can operate like this. It's fantastic.
And it's becoming more inclusive. As I say again, that's a very, very good thing. And one of the reasons it may have happened belatedly is because people in the game have been able to see the financial benefits.
Absolutely.
Well, I'm sure they're doing it for the right reasons, but the current lot are. But that has to be a good thing. I think there was this stat that we were using recently that 26% of English-born county cricketers went to 19 schools, which is crazy, isn't it? But imagine if we had 2,000 schools delivering that sort. I mean, maybe that's unrealistic, but there is more attention on investing in state school cricket. There is much more attention in encouraging people of colour into the professional game, much more attention on women's cricket and developing that. Those things have to be good.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we are kind of connected on the 100, but a push towards attracting cricket fans from urban areas is also a very, very important thing, no matter how you go about it, right? So there's kind of an understanding that needs
to be. As someone who's got clearly massive reservations about it as a competition, it's not about the format, really. 100 ball cricket, absolutely fine. No. That's just T20, that's 50 over. I used to love the old. Do you remember when the NatWest, whatever it was called, Gillette, was 65 overs?
Yeah, I do.
So you have to play 138 overs a day, Harvey.
Yeah. I know. That was just before my time, thankfully.
Yeah.
55 overs. 50. I came in just as a 55-over game. I got cut to 50. But that was when, I think, my first second-team game, we had 118 overs in a day for the second-team game. Played down at Kent, one of them games. It's like started at 10:30 in the morning, and finished at 9:00 at night. You just got on with it. The game went. So the game has transformed, and it is. It's a great game. We love it. And I go everything you've said about the inclusion for everybody. I have a little reservation on the state school bit from somebody who went to a state school. And, well, I would say I went to a state school. I was registered at a state school. I didn't actually go to it too many times. But I've got reservations of the money going that, but that's such a long story. We'll leave that for another week because
I think we will
be more invested in good cricket clubs, because I think bringing cricket people to teach cricket people would be better than school teachers getting a pot of money, not understanding what to do with it and not doing it properly. And I think that's probably what's happened over the generations before we get to this point, but we'll see what happens.
We will talk about that, because I also went to a state school and we played one day's cricket in my entire time at primary and secondary school. And the only reason we played that one day is because the teacher was friends with my dad and he just said, oh, let's play a day's cricket. What else are we going to talk about next week? There's another big topic. You kind of skirted around it. Private set equity, investment. I want to talk, and we're going to talk about this next week. We've run out of time this week. Andrew Strauss was speaking to the media last week, and I find him quite an interesting character and not so interesting at times in his commentating. But that is a topic I think we need to investigate and look at in more detail, but not today. Group hug, because another great show. Really enjoyed it, and we all love cricket, and it's all good. Harmy, you're an absolute star. You got up at 6 a.m. just so you could fit in the recording of this. George, delayed. I mean, basically, the black ties, the black suits, rather, are waiting for you to get down to London so you can be part of the Wisden lunch or dinner, whatever it is. I'm never invited, so I don't know. Nick Friend is in his sick bed. He'll be back next week. But for now, thanks for listening to Following On Counter Cricket.